going on, y'all? This is Cat Magnus, the propagandist. Today is Sunday, November 8th, 2020, and this is the Awakened Demagogue Podcast. We survived election week, and now, or tomorrow or Monday, well, soon, the real battle begins. First of all, congratulations to Biden and Harris on their projected win of the presidency and the vice presidency and the White House and all power and things in America. Congratulations to you guys. Congratulations to the Republicans. We elected a record number of women to the House. So, you know, shout out to the conservative women and how many of them are, I don't know, what do I want to say? Semi-biblically abiding housewife women type. And the only reason I say that is because conservatives believe in the traditional family. And, you know, as things progress and, you know, the traditional households where the wife is, you know, tilts down the home and the family, you know, more and more women are starting their own businesses. That's why you see, like, the rise of the mommy bloggers that we've had for a good while. There are a lot of conservative women who just see what's going on in their communities, and from volunteering and being a part of the PTA or just signing up to be on city council to make things better for their families and children, while their, you know, husbands go to do the hard work. Maybe, you know, there are a lot of men who are not politically inclined, but because their wives sit at home and watch the news and keep up with what's going on, they may want to take part or get education, some kind of certification or a degree, so that they can become public servants, at least in their locale. I actually saw that a lot, mainly during my undergraduate studies. There are a lot of stay-at-home wives that decided to get a government and public policy degree so they can take maybe an administrative part-time job within their communities, within their counties, or maybe run for a local seat, just to kind of help their communities be better for their families and their children's while their husbands. A lot of them, there's a Liberty University, my alma mater, is heavily military friendly, so a lot of those housewives had the military wife life. So it's actually really interesting to see this new age of people that, even though they adhere to traditional norms, they still find a way to make it meaningful in the 21st century. And that's what I kind of like about some of these newer pastors and preachers. My favorite is Stephen Furtick of Elevation Church. You can just Google that, find him on YouTube, and, like, you know, listen to some of his sermons. My mom really liked him after I exposed her to him. And sometimes on hard nights, or even when she was in the hospital especially, she would always say, put on your pastor, put on your preacher. And it's been a little emo for me today. I might do that this evening and get a good word. But what I really want to talk about is, you know, this whole fiasco, right? I'm not gonna rehash everything we just witnessed for the past week and how everyone kept saying the same thing over and over and over, and the Groundhog Day memes and God, what the fuck, can we just count quickly, like, we need the money, can we need a ballot counter likened to the money counter that can tell what the fuck is counting, something, need something better, right? Everybody was frustrated, but we finally got through it. The announcement came in yesterday, and I watched Biden, I watched Kamala Harris and Joe Biden give their acceptance speeches, and it was a really powerful moment. I believe there was one line that Biden absolutely needed to say, and it was, likely going to be paraphrasing because I didn't write it down by quote, but he basically said, instead of seeing, that we shouldn't see our opponents as enemies, we should see them as Americans. And of course he's talking about, you know, our political opponents. You know, America was founded by a group of, let's say it, British and European rebels trying to create their own way and their own life in their own country. And, you know, the Continental Congress and just sorting all that out when we had the New Jersey Plan and all of these deals, our country was built on compromises and striking deals. between opposing worldviews and desires. And that is something that cannot be lost on the American public. That's why it's important for us to do a little bit better, at the very least, in teaching our youth, you know, educating our youth on how things work in America. It's not just about, well, we're the left and we're right, and we're the right and we're right. It's like, in a lot of ways, both of you guys are right, and ultimately, you might want the same thing, you just have different ideas on how to approach it, you know? Like, we all want the same goal. We all want affordable health care, quality of life, a comfortable roof over our head, ways to earn income that allow us to live in a state of freedom. And if you're a doctor or a nurse, yes, you work hard, but if you chose that life because it's what you really wanted to do, it's not hard work. It's your passion. It's your mission. It's your calling. So we want to create a consciousness and a culture that is based on people choosing their lives for themselves and living it to the best of their ability. And how we get there, you know, everyone has a different version of what the how looks like, but at the end of the day, we have the same what, the same freedom, the same life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, or what's actually in the Constitution, life, liberty, and property. And, you know, that's why everyone from all over the planet flocks to America, because of these same views, these same goals. That's why we have a lot of political turmoil around the world, because there's the striving from the public to attain these deals and codify them in their own countries, because they don't really want to have to go to America to be free and build their own lives the way they want. They want to be able to do it right there at home in their home countries, right? So at the end of the day, we all want the same thing, but how we get there differs. And I mean, for there are 7 billion people on the planet. What that freedom looks like and how we get there is definitely going to vary by each person. But we try to, the thing about politics and policy is that it's an attempt to find as best a cure-all, for lack of a better phrase, a common cure-all that will appease as many different interests or paths to the goal as possible. So that's, you know, and we have to remember that we are all Americans, and we all are striving for the same goal. And what we're really arguing about is how we get there. And we should not cut each other's heads off because we're worried about how we get there. At the end of the day, everyone in America loves to make money. Period. I don't care. All of you spiritual fake ass new agers that want to call yourselves coaches and money mindset coaches and this and that and the other, you really don't want your taxes raised. And the thing is that I have a lot of people in my coaching community on Facebook. I got myself way deep into that community. I don't know how I did that. But you know, now there's a portion of them that are flexing their skills at reducing people's tax bills. And it's just like, yeah, because no one wants to really pay taxes. They want to keep what they earn. Now, you know, if there's a voluntary tax and we understand where the money is going and what it's for, okay, I wish there was at least an opt-in, like, this is what government has to do. These are our initiatives. These are the things that we have to keep in play. Yes, we need you to pay taxes. Everyone has to pay a tax. But you choose your taxation according to, you know, what you want, what you make, what have you. Because the thing about, like, the discussion with the billionaires, right? There are plenty of billionaires who would love to pay more because they understand that, you know, funding that social safety net, amongst other things, is what continues to make America great in comparison to other countries that aren't that great. Because as imperfect as America is, it's definitely better than most places on the planet. being honest, especially if you know anything about anything, and not just you took a vacation to somewhere in Greece and oh my gosh, it is absolutely better than America. Well, yeah, it's going to come off that way because you went to the tourist spot, right? Did you actually talk to locals? That, and not the ones that live in the good area to give you the perception, but the ones that live in the bad area, or the ones that live in the middle class of the country has one. You know what I'm saying? The tourism is intended to give people the best possible impression of an area. One, to attract them back, or to attract new tourists, and two, to ultimately get people to want to relocate. So that's just, you know, don't listen to people who took a vacation to France and said, oh, life is better in France, or they read an article about New Zealand, but they don't understand the actual mechanics of New Zealand. They just say, oh, I like these policies. Well, if you don't really know how they work, or you only know what a particular news outlet that may or may not be biased reported, then you really don't know. And then you don't have the capacity for comparative analysis to really understand if what works for New Zealand would absolutely work for America. Because what we're learning the hard way in America, and at the higher level, at the policy level, is that what works in America really does not truly work in other countries or with other cultures, no matter how much or how badly the population or the public may want the ideal of America. We have to make it so that we embody the ideal and then encourage or influence states to carve their own path to embodying these ideals, okay? So we're back to the why. We don't need to see the opponents or people who think differently as enemies, because the way America does life, liberty, and property may not necessarily vibe well with an Islamic theocracy, right? But the thing is, you got countries like Dubai within the UAE, such as Dubai, where it's well known that because of their exploitation of oil by the government, now everyone has come up out of poverty. You know, well, maybe not everyone, because every country still has the poverty class. But for the most part, like almost everybody like drives Lamborghinis, right? Then you have China, which is the big thing for many, many reasons. But ultimately, they found a way to synthesize capitalism, a strong free market, and a strong authoritarian government that also is socialist in how it, or communistic, because it is the CCP. So they're communistic in how they completely rule and govern how business is done, how business operates, how business grows, and then has its own businesses, government-sponsored businesses, not government-subsidized, where the government gives, like we do in America, where, you know, a company applies for a grant or something, and then they get the government money, or a government contract, and then they get the government money, and then they go do whatever the fuck they want to do. It's more like the company is actually owned by China. Or has, you know, the CCP has a seat at the table to kind of guide and govern how the company flows and how jobs are created and where people are shipped out to work, especially when they're building bridges and things like that around the developing world. But at the end of the day, that has worked for them. And, you know, when we get into these ideological comparisons and contrasts and competitions, you know, the Cold War was essentially capitalism versus communism, and the various places that communism was popping up, and the various places where socialism was taking root and then leading to communism, and then, you know, oh, we don't need people here thinking that's the answer because look at these assholes, like, we can't do that, right? So, you know, we have that kind of competition or contention going on again now with China. But the thing is, we have technology, info warfare, we have the new space race going on. So there are a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving pieces as far as trying to figure out whose way is the best way to achieve the ultimate goal, which is freedom, quality of life, love, you know, abundance, joy, spiritual growth. You know, the things that actually, the outgrowth, the final product of good governance. We're trying to figure out whose style of governance is good, much less the best. So it was very astute of Biden or his speechwriter, rather, to bring home the point that at least here in America, we need to understand that we have this one goal, this one nation, under God, indivisible. And yes, we can be divisive and we can divide on various issues based on our worldviews, but at the end of the day, we are one people in one country and one nation. And I think that was very important. And he didn't say the right or the left had to do it. He just said it had to be done, period. Of course, you had the analysts afterwards who tried to say, oh, he was saying the right needs to tone it down. But it's like, the left has been literally losing their minds for the past 4 or 5 years, so maybe you guys can, you know, take the hint that he didn't say which way. He said everybody sit y'all asses down. I'll give him that. Kamala's speech. I liked Kamala's speech because she focused on possibility in America and the fact that she got to where she is with faith, with belief, with hard work, and the thing that people really don't like that must be accepted is that she played the game. She got her education, she went to law school, she became a lawyer, she ran for DA, she got DA, she ran for attorney general, she got AG, she ran for the Senate, she got Senate, she said, and she, every time she broke a barrier, she was the first black, the first South Asian American, the first, you know, she was the first woman, whatever, first woman of all sorts, right? And all the things, right? She's been all the things, the first, all the things, over and over and over again. So, of course, she naturally wants to be the first female president. But guess what? She is still successfully accomplished being the first all the things vice president, with the anomaly of how do we address the man that we usually see in the seat of power. Now it's going to be the woman in the seat of power, and he's going to be the gentleman probably fucking around, fucking off, and drinking beer and having a good time and hanging out. And he's probably gonna, you know, he was a entertainment lawyer, he'll probably have his own initiatives, you know, for whatever the heck, because I think spouses are supposed to have their own little pet projects, and I'm sure he has his, you know, just based on the nature of the work that he did. Maybe there's an opportunity that he even sees he, you know, can influence by being right there alongside his wife in the second seat, which we already know based on Joe Biden's age and just the timing that it's either sometime during his first term or the second term, which he will probably not likely run because he will be old as fuck, right? So everyone expects her to be president up next, just because of that. So it's just kind of like, we already know she's a shoo-in. But even when she was running in the primaries, she was the candidate people wanted to know the most about. She always had the advantage. She had a shitty campaign. So if it comes around 2024, Biden says, you know, he finally, you know, achieved his top goal to be president. To honor his family, to honor his children, most now deceased. And, you know, he's like, finally, I'm done. You know, he might just really say, you know, Kamala, here, you know, take the reins. I did what I ultimately wanted to do in life. Now he's going to go settle down in his 80s and enjoy, you know, what he was able to do and what he was able to be a catalyst for. You know, he was the face that, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he was the face that could save the soul of America, because, like I've said, over the past year, he is the face and he has the posture, the demeanor that Americans are used to seeing, that the entire world is better dealing with. And, you know, we tried something new, and you know, that's what we do. We're all about innovation in America. You know, we tried something new, that shit didn't work out too well, so we're just gonna scale it back, go back to what we know, and then see if there's a better way to gamble next time around. That's really what we do, you know, as a people. Especially if you're an entrepreneur, you know, you try something out, you're like, damn, that was a really bad, that was a hard loss, we're gonna just scale back and stick to what works for a while, so we can work out the kinks and see how we want to innovate next time. But, you know, what I think it was really nice to see Kamala's speech. And just for her to be in that position, and she wore the suffragette white. And I mean, there's just so much to it. It's, you know, that when they had the commentary of, you know, Barack Obama being president and Hillary Clinton running for president and being the Democratic nominee, those glass ceilings being shattered paved the way for Kamala to be where she is. And Kamala said, you know, she may be the first in this position, but she won't be the last. First of all, she has solidly stamped her name and everything she's ever done in the history books. Whether you like, you know, the specifics of what she's done or how she's tried cases or whatnot, you gotta give respect to the fact that she set her mind on a goal. She wasn't afraid to get in the ring and play the game. And guess what? She won time and time and this time again. And that's really, really amazing and inspiring to see. And I remember my mom being on her deathbed. When Kamala was announced, that's when I had to get my mom to the hospital for the last time. And I was so caught up in trying to manage her care. I was like, oh, I kept forgetting to tell her that Kamala Harris was the VP nominee. And, you know, I finally got to tell her, and she, like, raised her eyebrow at me, you know, and like, oh, it was a nice surprise kind of thing. And I think that might have been a tearful moment for her if she was here, because she cried when Obama was elected. And like, my mom was born in 1947. She grew up through the civil rights movement and Jim Crow and all of that. So I mean, she got to live and just be alive, well, and walking around. And I remember when Obama won, and we were at home watching, and she came in my room and hugged me, like, boohoo, crying. I'm like, why are you crying? And I had to, like, think about it. It's like, that's really major for her to see in her lifetime. And to know that this, you know, although she just passed away, you know, Kamala Harris still, you know, making it to where she is. I mean, and then to see the crowds of people take to the streets. I think that would have happened either way, with whether it's a Trump win or a Biden win, the whoever, you know. I mean, Biden had 74 million votes. Trump had 71 million votes. Either way, no matter who won, people would have been taken to the streets celebrating. I think the right would have been a little bit more lit with, you know, their celebrations. A couple of them might have busted their guns, and, you know, hey, if you do it in a safe area, you know, that's fine. But either way, it was just nice to see people just go out and celebrate and be proud, not only of the change, but be proud of themselves. Be proud of the fact that they made a difference, that, you know, people got outside and I think this is the first election, at least in modern history, because of course, way back during the time of the founders, the population was not vast enough for votes to, you know, ultimately not matter or anything. That's why it was such an important thing for women to get the right to vote, for African Americans to get the right to vote, for everyone else to get the right to vote, or to attain the right to vote, to gain the right to vote. But now, while we have 330 million people, and it's so easy for 10,000, 20,000, or even a million votes to just kind of, you know, go to the wayside and, like, not really matter, for people to really see how close this race was, because everyone got at least a solid third of the country got off their asses and got out there and voted, or made sure they got the absentee ballots and made sure they took them in, turned them in, mailed them off, whatever they had to do. People really felt the impact of why it matters to take your votes seriously. And I think it was moving for me, because it wasn't just, you know, some people. You know, the Democrats have always exploited and kept minorities and marginalized populations as a part of their base, right? So even with the, you know, Blexit and walk away movement and all that, which significantly happened, and there are a lot of black and minority folks, you know, black, brown, LGBT, a lot of us were out there, you know, riding the right. I did not choose either presidential candidate. I abstained for esoteric reasons. and just the fact that I just could not give either one of them a vote. But to see, you know, I appreciate my choice of neutrality, because I don't feel like I won or lost. I'm on the side of my country and what my fellow compatriots chose for themselves, for us. And to see such a mixed and diverse people, especially Black people, out in the streets celebrating and finally feeling like they were heard and that their vote mattered and that the election came out in their favor because it mattered. They truly met, like, the whole year, Black Lives Matter, and it was the Black vote that mattered the absolute fucking most in this election. And to see what that Black vote did, how it turned everybody on their head, and I can't say, even, like, you know, when NBC was calling states for Biden without any polling results, which was asinine. It's like, how do you say who somebody won? You don't even have numbers on a board. But, you know, just to watch it progress from, oh, everybody's going to go blue, and then, oh my God, so much fucking red. And then to watch the media all just sit down and say, you know what, we did this in 2000, we did this in 08, and it went really, really fucking bad in 2016. We're going to sit down and fucking wait for the results of this time, because we can't keep fucking up this bad. Last time we kind of gave the country away, we can't do that this bad this time. And I applaud them for that. And I don't know. I lost my train of thought. But all I'm saying is, you know, it's just amazing. Yeah, to see how, oh yeah, that's what I was saying. You know, the despite the projections or the early projections, you know, just to watch it go from blue to red, and everyone's like, oh my God, you're like, Trump really, really, he did have it. Like, if people called elections the way they did in the past, Trump would have won on election night a long time ago, right? Like, they just would have given it to him if it was any other day, any other election. And for this election, let's face it, the leftist media, nobody wanted to see Trump win. And Trump was really on the cusp of winning. And everyone said, you know what, we're just going to wait for everybody to count all the votes this time. Because everyone knows, if you call it before the votes are done, well then, that's outright fraud and lying on the media, and the media already has a shitty reputation for that, so they had to slow their asses down, especially as the margins came in where a lot of these swing states were definitely surefire fucking Trump. And then at the last minute, they started turning back blue, and everybody's like, well, what the fuck is going on in America? Americans came out and showed each other who they were. If you look at the election map, you know, it's only the Northeast, the West Coast, and the Midwest that went hardcore blue. And that whole, I mean, it's almost an S curve through America from the Southeast up towards the Midwest, right? It's just like, that's all red, like from Florida up to, what was it, Montana or something like that. And it's just amazing to see. And I'm a patriot, so I'm moved by it, you know, just entirely. Like, just in it, just completely. But, you know, the battle begins next week, tomorrow. And it's about, can Trump and his legal team and these recounts get him what he needs to flip the election back in his favor? The election does not stop with the popular vote. We still have until December 14th for the Electoral College to vote. And that's where things can get a little murky. That's where things get a little tricky. And if Trump's lawsuits and various recounts are successful in his favor, then we can have another Gore Bush where Gore won, or even a 2016 where Hillary won the popular vote, but the electoral vote still goes to Trump. That is still a very real possibility, and I'm going to get into that on the last segment. In the next segment, I want to just kind of focus on Harris. Because there's a bigger picture as to what's going on, you know, from a cosmic perspective. Where are we going? Why she seems to always, you know, people have an anointing, and everyone's anointing is not about being a pastor or something like that. People, you know, she has some kind of anointing on her, and I want to explore that theory next. All right, y'all, round two. So in the last segment, I spent some time sharing my thoughts on the entire election experience that we all went through this week, and what it just kind of did for me, or what it meant for me, or what I got out of it, let's say. Let's talk about Kamala Harris, right? Kamala Harris, you know, like I said in the last segment, she gave a pretty important speech focused on, you know, potential and possibilities and whatnot. And, you know, her life, her track record, her career, if you can get over the fact that in order to get anywhere in the game, you gotta play it. She's done well. And there has to be some kind of calling or anointing on her life for her to always be the first of many things to do whatever it is that she is trying to do. Like I said, her track record in California when she was DA, then AG, and then Senator, and now she's, you know, VP elect, and will go on to be VP more than likely. You know, officially codified, and that's absolutely amazing. And I felt her energy and her name come out of my mouth the day she was announced, and I felt the strong energy. And a lot of people, they probably saw my Facebook and Instagram and Twitter posts, you know, well, Twitter posts reposted on my Instagram and Facebook pages. Basically, you know, kind of giving a prophetic vision. Biden and Harris are just going to win. It's not going to be... it's not going to be a landslide. It's going to be very close. It's going to be likened to the Obama moment, which I actually heard those comparisons in a lot of these news stories. It's actually amazing to see, one, my gift work so fantabulously well, as it always does. I don't know why I would ever even think that it wouldn't. But on the other hand, it's to just, you know, why was I given that level of vision and intuitive, you know, insight into this? And why was this the event where I couldn't fix my mouth to see or hear or feel anything but that, right? And, you know, I'm looking at it, and it's like, maybe she just has an anointing or calling on her life. You know, I'm just really looking at it right now. She probably just has an anointing or significant calling on her life. Like, that's what really went well. Or may really be working out for her, especially from a cosmic or metaphysical perspective. Yeah, I said the international community will be pleased and some stability will be restored. That has already happened just in response to the election, or the Biden and Harris being president and vice president elect. America will be respected again. Justin Trudeau of Canada has already said he's ready to warm up to and work with Biden. Even Boris Johnson has pivoted and is trying to warm up to a Biden that we all know is going to be the opposite of Trump. We may actually see a new Cold War with proxy tools, but of a different kind, more in space and cyber, which is where I'm focusing my energies, because that's the future of humanity. I've actually been watching this show, The Expanse, Amazon Prime original. Fan fucking tabulous. And it really makes me wonder, like, what is the future of humanity as a spacefaring species? Will we have this supply chain, what they call belt apparatus in space, where people live and grow to, you know, as this worker bee class, as almost a slave class within the solar system, you know, colonized and expanded on by humanity. It's set a few hundred years in the future, because it's realistic for us to even have anything close to that. It's gonna take a few centuries. And even then, I'm just like, dang, do I really want to truly ascend, or do I want to come back? That shit's gonna be fucking interesting, right? And, you know, right now in the show, I'm on season 4, you know, Mars and Earth were at war, and there was a peace come over because something called a proto-molecule actually opened up multiple portals to multiple potential, universes or solar systems or galaxies, where there are habitable planets. So now people are trying to find their way. So there's like Stargate, but even better, right? It's not like just ultimate military operation. It's really like the UN is actually the world government, and they liaise with the Martian Congressional Republic. And then they have the Belters, the worker bee people, who, you know, are likened to the third world developing countries that, you know, the major powers don't really care about, but they know exist, and they probably need stuff from them. But anyway, it's a really good show, you should check it out. Anyway, just bringing it all back, yeah, so, you know, Russia and China have opponents they understand and can contend with, as in Biden and Harris and things like that. Things are really just basically going to go back to normal. I actually heard on one of the newscasts, on one of the news reports, that people are taking a sigh of relief because they no longer have to pay attention. That is a key statement that anyone who pays attention should pay attention to. The media said we all can take a deep breath because Americans who have become, you know, hyper-politicized, they no longer have to pay attention. Now, it is our lack of paying attention that led to decreased voter turnout, a multitude of policies that were not in any given person's interest, being passed, policies in those groups of people's interests, you know, not being passed. And that's how the rich stay rich, the powerful stay powerful, the media stay rich and famous buffers stick. They're like rich and famous buffers, but with a level of access that no one else can, that like no other regular celebrity can get, right? So no one has to pay attention to what actually happens in the power circles anymore. And yet, we are the most divided and less trusting of government and the media than we ever have been. Like, wow. That was revealing. But anyway, back to the calling on Kamala Harris's life. You know, when we think about the evolution of human consciousness and this push towards mindfulness and freedom, entrepreneurship, mindset, development, spirituality being more the norm than hardcore old school religion, religious groups taking more secular or worldly approaches to their ministries so they can actually connect with people. And if you're in the evangelical community or the megachurch community, you know, win souls for Christ. And it's just in this time, it was actually important, you know, Kamala means lotus. Now, someone on Newsy said it means lotus flower in Sanskrit. It's like, I hate when people do that. That's why I had to go back and look it up for myself, because I'm like, you probably spun that or added something to it. Kamala means lotus, period. Lotus in Sanskrit. Yeah, lotus or pale red. Now, a lot of people in the spiritual community, if you follow mainly the dictates of Buddhism, like, the lotus flower has actually been sacred in the East and in Asia for centuries, if not millennia. I believe it was the, give me a second, finding of feet. Yeah, it was the Chinese that would have women bind their feet so that it would look more like a lotus flower. They would call them lotus feet. So the lotus flower in, since we're going with China, which is big on Buddhism amongst its Confucianism and Taoism and whatnot, the lotus flower is regarded in many different cultures, especially in Eastern religions, as a symbol of purity, enlightenment, self-regeneration, and rebirth. Its characteristics are a perfect analogy for the human condition. Even when its roots are in the dirtiest waters, the lotus produces the most beautiful flower. And this analogy, now if anyone understands Buddhism, Buddha actually studied under the yogis in India. So when one practices Buddhism, or what an Asian man gathered from his studies and his ascetic practices with yogis in India, ultimately it goes back to Hinduism and the yogis and the gurus of India. Like I said, Buddha was an Asian man, far eastern man who studied in India, and then through his journey sat under a tree, discovered nirvana, and then went on with his own ministry, which went on to become a world religion. So for the Western world, that's all like Buddhism this and Buddhism that and Buddhism this and Buddhism that, I mean, you don't really know or understand Buddhism until you know and understand Hinduism. That's why many things in Buddhism are in Sanskrit, because it's not truly Chinese or Japanese or Vietnamese. It's not even truly East Asian. It's Indian, which is Southeast Asian. But it's still very, very stark differences, not only in just, you know, genetically, like in how people look, but also culturally, right? So these are things that we all have to keep in mind. So let's look at this, you know, interfaith synchronicity, right, of the lotus flower and Kamala essentially being named Lotus, and her ability to grow and blossom, if you will, to unfold, for her career and her life to unfold in the way that it has, for it to reach this fullness of blossoming, or at least close to a fullness of blossoming, with her, you know, on the way to becoming the vice president of the United States. And then we have to look at where we are in human consciousness and the shift that is going on. Because for right now, it feels like a shift towards the norm. And, you know, Donald Trump was definitely a shift away from the norm. He was that kind of, you know, everybody wake up now, it's time to get moving. And then after we get out of the chaos and the fire and the storm, we kind of find that calm and that peace. But that calm and that peace, especially on the spiritual journey and self-actualization and all of these things, and consciousness evolution, you know, there's that peace. And right now we're in the peace, you know. I mean, there's a little storm coming because Trump's gonna fight, and it's like breaking a bad habit, you know, changing your diet. The old ways are gonna come up and they are going to fucking fight. And like, they're like, you're bad, you know, you're smoke, like when you're trying to break a habit that, you know, it's hard to break smoking cigarettes, it's hard to break addiction from alcoholism, it's hard to break drug addiction, it's hard to break away from social media and memes. So now we're learning how to monetize it, so at least we're not wasting our lives spending all of our time on the internet and with technology. These old habits die hard, and you know, that's the thing, like COVID, like these old habits, everyone having to go into the office and the slave master mindset of many managers that want to be self-important or something like that, that has gone out of the window. You know what I'm saying? It was really starting to die a slow death, or it started to die a slow death years ago, but now it's just like, look, boom, it's time to switch, it's time to pivot, and guess what, it's turning out to be better than what you old assholes thought it would be. So, you know, all around the world we have this mega shift going on, right? And then there's the unfolding, the further advancement of human consciousness, of our ability to see that, oh, things don't have to be the way that they always were. That Democrats don't have to vote blue just because they're black, but because they believe in the candidate. Or they can find that they don't believe in the candidate and vote for somebody the fuck else, you know? Oh my god, we do not have to be bound by these constructs of the old world. And when we think about the concepts of enlightenment and regeneration, rebirth, and a renewal, I mean, to be the first woman of many things, sorry, I dropped my pen, to be the first woman of many things, to just break glass ceiling after glass ceiling after glass ceiling, and then, you know, use Hillary as one stepping stone, Barack Obama as the other one, and then, you know, as for the basketball metaphor, you know, just go ahead and hit the slam dunk, you know what I mean? Now, she didn't make president, but we all know the setup between her and Biden is for her to ultimately be president anyway, whether it's this term or next term, you know what I mean? It's the ultimate setup for her. So what is this anointing on her life? What is it about? And that test takes a really deep analysis of not just who she is and her past, but also a deep look into her culture, how it actually impacted herself as a being, as a human being, growing up. And not just the superficial, she was raised by activists, but I mean really getting deep into her mother being an immigrant from India and her father being from Jamaica, and what that looked like and the mix. I mean, hey, I mean, that's two different types of curry chicken going on in one household, you know what I mean? Like, and yet they still have that commonality, right? Indian curry is spicy as fuck. I'll take my Jamaican curry any day, but still. You know, what does it really mean? Because she's not just black African American. She's Jamaican and Indian. Right? So it's she's a woman of all the things that is not quite what everyone was truly looking for or expecting or even hoping for, but yet she still embodies what we need to see. And when we look at, you know, just symbolism, like the name Meeting Lotus, the self-generate, the regeneration, the rebirth, the enlightenment. And we have this neo-enlightenment movement going on, right? Well, spirituality is going mainstream, occultism is gaining in popularity, esotericism, you know, everyone's seeking deeper meaning in the divine because, let's face it, people are losing faith. One, in the church, people, to government, everyone's betrayed, you know, and everyone's just trying to find this thing. That's why you have a lot of people getting into new age spirituality or just general spirituality. Everybody wants to be a witch and getting at paganism and stuff because the people of the church have abandoned God because limited human understanding and the good try, but not so well executed attempt at explaining God through anthropomorphism. You know what I mean? That people can't separate humanity from God. So a lot of people are abandoning God because people suck, even though it's all throughout the Bible or just any holy book. People are not that fucking great. God is always eternal. Be a better person and help others be good. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And then karma and then, you know, the law of reciprocity and then rhythm and polarity and all that good stuff. So, and when I'm looking at how people are, quote unquote, waking up or trying to wake up or trying to find their own new enlightenment, their own understanding of God, you know, like we say in the 12-step programs, you know, God as we understand God. And some people still can't find or see God, so they continue to abandon the concept, you know. But what does it mean even just for the pure mystics and metaphysicians who we all believe in God as we understand God, but some of us really can better quantify God than others? You know, what does it, this is just a special time because it's not just the milestone that Harris has achieved. It's everything going on around it. The liberal world order and the left going hard for changing language, right? Trying to influence how we speak to one another, how to, infiltrate consciousness by throwing out dictates on how we should be conscious or mindful of one another. And to know that, you know, I've been in the whole consciousness and esotericism and metaphysics for well over a decade. And when we study the various religions and world beliefs, they all take us back to the East, especially if you're into the actual spirituality, doing the yoga, doing the meditation, doing the all the stuff that mindfulness has just kind of repackaged and then thrown a brand on it, put it in a book and sold it, which I absolutely despise because it's watered down and bastardized Hinduism. Right? And that's interesting because I saw a news report today on Newsy saying that India is celebrating Kamala's achievement. They are calling her a daughter of India, a symbol of what can be achieved by Indians, especially Indian Americans. It's brought honor to her name and her family. There's the thing about honor and that concept and how it's popular in the East. All of these key factors are checked off for her. And it's interesting because, yes, she is also of Jamaican descent, but it's the Kamala, it's the Indian aspect of her that is really resonating right now. Like, anyone knows me for a while, you know I do reading and my powers are kicking up, I guess, now. And that's the part of her, that's the side of her that is really resonating or emanating or radiating the most. And knowing what I know cognitively through study is that it's a synchronicity of her ancestry and her lineage and even her name to the sacred and to the oldest religion on earth aside from indigenous tribal traditions, the only formal organized religion that's the oldest one on earth. And that is significant spiritually, metaphysically. A lot of the things that we believe in, that we think we understand in Western mysticism, originates from the Vedas of the Hindu religion. So to see that level of embodied influence take a seat or hold, or, you know, in America, where we are, we were founded on the Western Enlightenment and the Renaissance and the Romanticized period, right? Those minds, right? But ultimately, when you really study, it takes you back to Hinduism. It takes you back to the culture that Kamala, literally in name, and her mother in person, derive from. And what does that symbolize? Is that the spiritual foundation of placing the capstone back on the pyramid that is America, the beacon of light that America is supposed to be? Biden didn't really hold that true, we're gonna get America where it needs to be energy. He just didn't hold that. And for some reason, Harris did. She does. And I think there is just an anointing on her life. Not in the way that we understand in the Western Christian way in ministry and stuff. But a larger cosmic anointing on her and her life. That is just a catalyst or harbinger of something greater. Of the steps forward that we will be taking. Not just as a country, but as a human collective. Because if you look at it, it's kind of like a full circle kind of thing, you know, from the oldest to the newest. The snake begins to eat its tail, if you will, and the circle is kind of completing itself in a sense, to create a new cycle, or to at least initiate a new cycle. And I'm very interested in seeing where this goes. Like I said, I'm a registered Republican. I have my reservations on a lot of things that the left wants to do. But then I also see the usefulness in a lot of the things that the left wants to do. And it's just about how we get there. and what we do with that and who we become with that. You know, if say we do master a synthesis of market economy with, you know, stronger social programs or just a little more socialism in there just to accommodate things like COVID-19, automation, tech taking over, cyber being the new wave, space being the new frontier. As humanity continues to advance physically, it's going to have to advance mentally, emotionally, and of course, most importantly, spiritually, which is why we have this spiritual renaissance right now, and the new age movement is trying to pick up everybody that abandoned the church. Because as we move forward, you're gonna have to believe in something that has nothing to do with Armageddon or people killing each other off or going to war or anything like that. It has everything to do with faith, because when we discover the unknown, once we enter into the unknown, we cannot always be reactive and fearful. Because if we go out into the vast unknown of the cosmos and react to the cosmos the way we do each other and what we have here on Earth, it will definitely not bode well for humanity. But you know, I would have to do more research into Harrison and what she actually believes and how she lives those beliefs. We know her cultural heritage, but what does she really truly believe on the cosmic level, on the spiritual level? What is her actual mindset and worldview? Like, we know that she's the AKA and she wears her pearls, or she's the shit. She does this thing. She doesn't pay attention to these do nothing. You know what I'm saying? She don't argue with these lazy bitches. She just raises her price. You know what I'm saying? Like, to quote Beyonce, she don't argue with these lazy bitches. She just raised her price. So, you know, I feel you, sis. Let's, you know. But at the end of the day, there's just something really bigger going on. And as I contemplate, you know, my own work and my own research and what I'm really just gonna be looking to put forward into the world, you know, there's a big convergence of consciousness in politics, and it always has, because, you know, most lawyers and politicians were also philosophers, especially historically. We've actually lost that art, and we need that back. We need more philosopher kings. Please, I will opt for that, because I'm going to be the advisor, okay? I'm Joseph, okay? You can be the pharaoh, but I'm the one that's making sure your shit works. That's all I'm saying, because, you know, I don't want the crown. That's a lot of pressure, but I do want the throne, if you know what I'm saying. So, yeah, let me see. And that's consciousness in the liberal world. Yeah. I'm reading through my notes to make sure I didn't miss anything that I wanted to say, and you know, I did not. That's pretty much it. Like, but the thing is, like, you need such a keen awareness of consciousness and cosmic synchronicity to really put all this together. And I guess that's my job, because it's even making my head hurt. But there is a larger cosmic synchronicity going on right now. And I think that's probably why, no matter how much I may not have cared to see these people when I was given that vision, that intuitive insight to say, this is what is going to happen. And there are a lot of people that wanted it to happen, so they're just trying to say, yeah, I'm woo, and I did all these predictions. Well, there's difference between prediction and prescience, right? And let me go ahead and be arrogant. I'm a bona fide seer. I'm not somebody who trained myself. I'm not somebody who read a book about it. I'm diabetic. I am not somebody who can even afford to be a vegan, literally for my health. I don't meditate all the time, but I've been seeing the future since I was a child. Okay, so for all these people who are here trying to read the right books and meditate at the right times and eat the right food so you can try to say you made some predictions, I was born with the gift of prescience. I'm a bona fide seer of God. When I say I'm Joseph, I mean, like, I really fucking mean that, right? Because I'm not, there are some people who are very gifted, but they had to practice. I don't get to practice. I was just born this way. And when it's always different when you're born that way, because that is, for just speaking for me, that's my own anointing. And with great power comes great responsibility. So there are some people who are having all the fun and learning how to do all the things. But if you actually have that gift and anointment and appointment. One, you don't need a book. You don't need a special diet. All you can do, personally speaking, is surrender. Now that does not, I'm just going to have to admit the fact that I'm a little special, and that's fine, but that is also a universal principle in personal and spiritual and professional development. When you have a calling on your life, and trust me, the divine God has a calling for all of us. Some of us, our callings are different than others. Some of us, if you want to look at it at in a hierarchical way, some of us, a higher calling than others, because some may just be, called to be teachers or to steward small communities. And then there's some of us who are meant to advise, great rulers around the world, or be the great ruler around the world. You know what I mean? Or just some other operators. We all have a calling on our lives. And the only thing we can truly do in the end is surrender and then take right action. And that is the only right action I will advocate for in this world, because the liberal world order that is coming forth is one that is going to, from a foreign policy perspective, mirror the CCP or China. It's going to be an encouragement of right thinking, right speaking, right acting, being socially acceptable. We already see it. We already feel it. That's why there was such a huge backlash from the right. That's why Trump was put into office, because don't tread on me, don't tell me what to do, this and that and the other. I'm not subscribing to your right thinking, your right speaking, your right acting, but that is the way the liberal world order is going. And if we wanted to talk about ETs, we need to get our shit together so we can actually be mature enough to handle that level of disclosure. Because guess what? Has anyone noticed that suddenly there is a flurry of NASA stories? Multiple planets suddenly popping up. We got the hell planet K245 or something like that. That's like, it rains rocks and oceans are made of molten lava. There are indications of water and life on Mars. We are having all of these cosmic discoveries come into play in the midst of our new space race, which is highly governed and influenced by cyber technology, the tech world, and AI, artificial intelligence, which is best and most supported data-wise by 5G. So this is a huge moment, not just because Kamala Harris, the woman of all the things who broke the glass, broke the ultimate glass ceiling, and will soon she already broke it just by being where she is, because we know they're going to put her in next. we know they're going to put her in next. They just call that a done deal, right? And this full circle of the Lotus finally making it not just to America, and I can say it in the sense of the rise of the spiritual movement. People want to get into mysticism and Wicca and all this stuff, and all the and Buddhism, not realizing that they're studying an offshoot of Hinduism and all that. Just that full circle moment, right? Where the West wants to be so much like the East that we call the East into our seat of power. By way of immigrants, of course, because that's the only way it could be done. And then it's like, it's just this cosmic full circle moment of illumination, of calling for human consciousness elevation, and weeding out the wheat, separating the wheat from the chaff, if you want to go biblical. Basically, there's going to be a fragmenting of human society. And it's shown its face slightly through race relations, the rise of populism and the alt-right and whatnot, that fragment of human consciousness. But there's going to be a deeper fragmenting of human consciousness. And that fragmenting is going to be those who actually elevate and rise to that higher standard, and those who remain, who cling to the mundane and who choose to remain in the profane lower levels of consciousness. And then, where people are placed within new, what do I want to say? that new construct, if you will. That's definitely where humanity is headed, period. Like I said, Biden and Harris in particular are a huge catalyst for that. Trump was a very necessary catalyst to him and COVID together. They were just the, come on, snap out of it, because we as a collective were having too much fun talking about the things and trying to get paid for it, not realizing that this shit is real, and if we are going to actually elevate, we need to jump off the cliff, we need to jump off the precipice, we need to stop standing here talking to each other blue in the face, trying to prove who knows the meaning of what word and how much they can get paid for it. Grow up. It's time to live it. It's time to be it. Because guess what? The governance part of that, the governance piece, is about to go next level, right? And all of the masses, all the peanut gallery, all the people, you either wake up and you understand and you get with the program, or you get left behind. And we're not quite sure what the behind for you is going to look like, because it might look like you're going to be one of these belter worker bees in between Earth and Mars that no one gives a shit about. I don't know. All I know is there is definitely a mega shift going on, and Kamala Harris is at She's not at the center, but she's damn near close. I would say she's at the center of it right now, and maybe no one really realizes it, because she means a lot, and that's because America means a lot. And Hinduism, the lotus, spiritual consciousness, human consciousness, spiritual development, all of that is truly at the center of it. And I think, you know, we focus on what a spiritual guru or what some advanced enlightened being should look and act and speak like, that we don't realize that it can be as simple. The synchronicity and the symbol we need to pay attention to, because it can be as simple as the meaning of someone's name and their cultural background. So this one was a little long, but if you just stay with me, I got one more segment for you guys, and it's going to get into, can Trump really flip this thing around for himself? And there is a possibility through his strategy. He is, again, might look a little crazy on camera, but he's not off. So I'm getting to that next. Alright, y'all, round three. So in the last segment, I know this is going to be long, but bear with me. But in the last segment, I went into my musings and abusings and things and thoughts. I don't know why I said abusings, it rhymed. But anyway, I got into what I think about basically the future of humanity, what we have to look forward to, and the meaning, the cosmic meaning of Kamala, means lotus or deep red. And if anyone knows anything about alchemy, the red phase is actually the final phase when you transmute into something more, something greater, something better, your more purified self, led into gold. Anyway, the red phase, the lotus phase, Kamala's phase is the end phase. So that's just another signal as to where the fuck we're going and why she's so important now. Just to kind of go over what's going on with the final fight, is the final countdown. And Trump, as he has his troops out there, he's got his lawyers in, hold on, honey, let me just, okay, he's got his lawyers in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan, Georgia, Nevada, and Wisconsin. Now we got, you know, we had a lot of hoaxes or whatnot, homegrown misinformation, as I call it, that has been slightly boosted by Russia and other foreign agents, but I mean, we are so divided and at each other's throats that no adversary even had to lift a finger for us to be the shit show that we were this year. Now, just a note that the right is right. The election is not truly over and done and decided. The media is only able to do the math with their political analysts. They're only able to do the math and project who the winner is most likely to be. However, based on the popular vote. However, the Electoral College does have the final say, so it is the final check on the popular vote to make sure that there is no, what do I want to say, there is no undue tyranny of the majority. You know, we can't have just New York and California deciding what's best for everyone in the country. You know what I mean? So that's why we have all these various checks and balances. It's not just for Congress to put a check on the president. It's also for a group of people who are at least somewhat educated and aware of how things work and the principles of this country and what we stand for, to put a check on the population, on the popular vote, in case we get duped, right? Because ain't no Mussolini, motherfucking Mao, motherfucking Lenin, Stalin revolution about to go down in here. I don't care how Sanders and AOC plus three feel about it. This shit's not going down in America. But what we can do is take a look at what works and see if we can make it work for us. But we're not just gonna go down the fucking rabbit hole with you guys. Had to get that off my chest because that's how I feel. I don't rock with y'all on the left. But if it makes sense, we can, you know, we can do business. You know, I'm the objective one, right? So Electoral College does not vote until December 14th. That is when our official votes for president will be cast. That means that once the electoral vote is cast on December 14th, then Biden or Trump will officially be elected or reelected, respectively, to the presidency. Now, why am I still saying Biden or Trump? As we know it, oh my gosh, it has to go to Biden, right? Because he won. Like, the math, you know, works out for him, especially with the popular vote. Like, it's working out. It's going to work the way that the left and the people and we want it to. And ideally, that would be pretty cool. But then there's the reality that most people, especially in mass, are stupid, and groupthink does not often bode well for a body politic. That's why the founders did, that's why many of the founders were against a pure democracy, because groupthink, which leads to tyranny of the majority, does not guarantee that, you know, it's just like the saying, just because something is popular, it doesn't make it right. And just because something is right doesn't mean it will be popular. So that is the basic, that's the real, I guess, moral thought behind having an electoral college to kind of check. You know, just because it's popular doesn't mean it's what's right, especially for America. So you have the electoral college who may choose to make the right choice, although it's unpopular, right? So thinking about that, I don't want to do like a lot of math. Let's just make it plain, right? We're tired of everyone's fucking numbers and stuff. But okay, as it stands, Biden has won tremendously, one hell of a fight, but he still won. He skirted by. The problem is there are a few states who are not, that do not bind their electors, right? So that means that in states like Georgia, in Pennsylvania, they can, the electors in that state can choose to go against the popular vote. 32 states and the Washington, D.C. have codified or try to implement some kind of policy or law that mandates the electors to vote in accordance with the popular vote. Not all states have implemented that kind of law, and there is no federal mandate for that, and I agree with keeping it that way. If all states want to get on board with it, then that's fine, and they can do so in their own way, in their own locales, in the set of protocols that work best for their states. But you know, keeping the federal government out of, you know, the will of the people as much as possible is where I stand on that. The thing is, you know, Trump has lawsuits, like I said, in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan, Georgia, Nevada, and Wisconsin. Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, and Wisconsin are all states that bind their electors to the popular vote. right? So we're back to the math and the maps and the stupid stuff, right? But let's just make it like really plain. Pennsylvania is what initially put Biden over the top to win, secure him at least from the in the preliminary popular vote, the presidency. He is president-elect per the popular vote, thanks to Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is one of those states that does not bind its electors. And we all know how painfully close Pennsylvania was. So that is an opportunity for an electoral flip. Georgia is another state that does not bind its electors to the popular vote. And to this very second, we are still holding our breath trying to figure out which way it's going to go ultimately in the popular vote, even though one, the Secretary of State for Georgia has already stated that there will be a recount, and even though it's leaning towards Biden, it's still a razor thin margin that warrants a recount. So recount or not, Georgia's electors, because they are not bound to the popular vote, can still vote for Trump. They can still go the other way. Like, even if they do a recount and Georgia comes out blue, still the electors on December 14th can still decide to vote in Trump. So if you lose Pennsylvania, right? Honestly, Biden only has to keep Arizona and Nevada, and he still has his 270. He could lose everybody else and still be good with just, if we just, you know, reset the clock back to the 253, 214 electoral vote standoff that we had all week. Biden could lose everybody but Arizona and Nevada, two states that bind their electors to the popular vote, right? And he would still have the presidency. So it's very unlikely that there will be a flip and Trump will come out as reelected. However, it is still possible because, say, Pennsylvania and Georgia's, you know, they have the faithless electors and they go for Trump. It was so close, they decide to go ahead and go with the first margin anyway, and they turn those red. Okay. Like I said, Biden only needs Arizona and Nevada, right? So that means Trump has to be able to call in double counts and flip the popular vote in Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, and Wisconsin. Very least. He at the very least has to be able to take Pennsylvania, Georgia. North Carolina is also one of those toss-up states. It is also one of the states that does bind its electors. But Trump is more than likely going to get North Carolina anyway. So that doesn't really make a difference. Where it makes a difference is Arizona has traditionally been red and it just kind of went blue. Like they were just counted as blue, right? So legal proceedings, some kind of recount, something that can ultimately say, okay, which is really the only way he could do it is if he gets a recount and it's recounted and he comes out on top. That's the only way he could flip that. Michigan is the same way. If he can get a recount and it flips to him. Nevada, the same thing. If he can get a recount and it flips to him. Wisconsin, the same thing. If he can get a recount and it flips to Trump. The popular votes in Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, and Wisconsin would all have to flip towards Trump because their electors are bound to the popular vote in those states. So there's no, the Electoral College can do whatever the hell they want to do. Not in Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, or Wisconsin, or even North Carolina. They can't. They are legally bound to go by the popular vote. Pennsylvania can be tricky. Georgia is inherently tricky because Atlanta, and I grew up in Atlanta. I grew up in the metro area. It is a fucking anomaly, okay? Fulton County, DeKalb County, DeKalb, okay? Fulton and DeKalb County are anomalies in a very, very red and rural state, period. It was those metro Atlanta counties that even took Trump's margin away and started to get the state to lean blue. towards Biden. Shout out to all the black women out there, but we still have to remember that Atlanta and the metro area there is a fucking anomaly, okay? That is not how Georgia feels. That's not how the state of Georgia feels. That's just how Negroes in Atlanta feel. So there's that piece. So all in all, with a good fight and the right people doing the recounts, there really is, you know, Ted Cruz was right. There really is still a path to the presidency for Trump. There is still a path towards re-election for Trump. If he can get the recounts that somehow change the margins towards Trump and Pennsylvania electors and Georgia electors decide to go against anything leaning blue, he can definitely procure another 4 years after December when the final decision is made. And that's the thing. A lot of people just wanted to be, the people wanted, especially like in the last election, people said, you know what, the people want this. We want a pure democracy. Give it to the Electoral College because we want our way, damn it. But like I just said, what's popular is not always right. And what's right is not always popular, which is why we are not run by what's popular. We are run by what we ultimately believe is right, which is why I think it's important for electors to still have the freedom, or at least enough electors in enough states to have the freedom to make their own decisions independent of the popular vote. Because what's popular is not always right, and what's right is not always popular. And I don't mean like right as in politically. I mean right as in correct or moral or what have you. Or just in alignment with American interests and what it means to be American and to keep America as America. Because while Kamala may have this spiritual and cosmic catalyst symbolism in her rise and where she's going and the liberal world order and the expanse being some kind of actual reality in the next few centuries, and we're laying the groundwork for it now, even with all those things, we have to be cautious of globalism and socialism and communism coming in, because they ultimately take away all your freedoms and say government knows what's best for you. So give all your trust to government, especially if you put a democratic spin on it. That's why democratic socialism is so important, because they're giving all their power ultimately to government, but they're saying, well, we get to choose our kings. We get to choose our nobility. We get to choose these people. But you're still giving all of your power to these people. And the only power they're giving you is to choose which people you're giving all your power to. The way America is set up now, yeah, we choose representatives who you know, may or may not execute policies that may or may not be in our best interests individually and collectively. However, we still have various freedoms, speech, protest, assembly, religion, all of the things, right? 14th Amendment, life, liberty, and property, right? And socialist, which is a step towards communist, gently and gradually erodes on those. And that's why it's so important for us to become enlightened, to engage this information age in a responsible and adult way, because if we don't know that we're having our rights taken from us, if we cannot readily perceive the encroachment of tyrannical government, like the American authoritarian is not going to be a Trump. It's going to be a Biden, a Harris, a Clinton. Their true authoritarians are going to be an AOC or a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren. To be honest, I can see Harris going in that direction, but ultimately she's not a socialist. Neither, and that's one thing. Everyone says socialism is going to take over because Biden and Harris are in. It's like neither Biden nor Harris are socialists. At best, they're centrists. They're moderates, right? They may be very progressive on social policy, the do what you want to do. And they may be a little bit more liberal on the social safety nets and things, but they're not going to get rid of the private sector. Like Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and AOC and the crew with. They're not going to try to get rid of the private sector or seize the means of production because they know what's best for everyone. They're not going to do that. I mean, they have in their pockets big industries. They're going to still be for big industry. And you kind of want politicians that are big for big industry because, let's face it, most Americans dream of having their big business, their multi-million dollar consultancy, all these capitalist dreams. And they go away if you let a Sanders and a Warren and an AOC plus three, they all of that goes away if you let them get into power. Which is why they didn't get into power, you know? And then she's like, well, I'm going to hold my support unless you give us da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, she's still green and she doesn't really understand that, you know, they'll let her talk because it sounds good to other people. And then when they get in there, she's not going to have much of a voice. She learned that already with Nancy Pelosi. And now she tried to play that shit with the election. We're glad that she got reelected, boo. Good for you. But at the end of the day, the shit still works the way it does because we don't rock with the shit that you're talking. Okay? And that's just who we are as Americans. Because the more we let these little expansions come in, the more that we lose. The more liberty we lose. The more freedom we lose. We willingly give it away. And that's what it is. They want us to willingly give away our rights to this all-knowing, all-powerful government that, you know, we respect that you have your religious belief, but we are the ones who provide, right? That's the balance that they're ultimately going to try to strike. We are the ones who know all. We are the ones who provide. Government is godlike. You know, take it back to the times of the pharaohs, you know, and ancient times where the kings and pharaohs, they were believed to be demigods, right? Direct descendants of God. You still have that in the crown, in the British crown, continuing that divine right of kings and queens. And the only reason they've survived is because, you know, Philip was like, bruh, you need to stay. He was like, bruh, he's more like cuz, because they're cousins. Elizabeth and Philip are cousins. But he was like, cuz, like, we can't do what we did back over there. We on a run because we had a little too much fun. So you got to scale back and let people feel empowered, because if you keep, you know, heavy-handed and iron-fisting it, you might get run out. And this ain't even really our throne. Like, we just took it. You know what I'm saying? Might need to tone the shit down. I just think it's fascinating that Britain is run by a German family and no one talks about that. But that is another topic for another podcast. So, can Trump win the presidency with one hell of a fight and some wicked counting? Yes, he can. If electors in Pennsylvania and Georgia decide to rock with him and not the popular vote in Georgia, whichever way the popular vote goes after a recount, yes, he can. Is it likely? No, it is not very likely, especially with him having to actually procure recounts that flip the vote to his side, Trump. It's looking unlikely. It's looking unlikely for him to even get the recounts that he's looking for. And I mean, like, it's happened in the past, you know. They recount it and it just slims the margin, but the margin is still there. So it's very unlikely for them to flip the margin. However, Biden did have statistically impossible numbers. Like, it was like the anomaly when you're doing a tarot reading and you pull all upward facing or all down or reverse cards. Like, what the hell is that about? And then they make you reshuffle the deck, right? So, you know, that's a very valid reason for calling for these recounts and getting a second set of eyes. But will the end result swing towards Trump? In some of these really, really, really tight states, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia especially, the flipping of the vote to marginally favor Trump is possible. Not entirely likely, but definitely possible, especially in Georgia. It's even likely in Georgia because that's Georgia. But at the end of the day, Pennsylvania and Georgia, they are two states where the electors are not bound to these important swing states, that the electors are not bound to the popular vote. That's something to definitely pay attention to. However, without Pennsylvania and any other state, all Biden needed, if we go back to the 253, 214, all Biden needed was Arizona and Nevada anyway. And he's more than likely going to keep those. So, there's that. You wanted to hear me do some math. I did it. So, I don't know if I'm going to get back to y'all in a couple days or in a week. My process is going in the way that it's going, but I'll definitely get back to you guys super, super ASAP. I really just took my time because I wanted to get through the election and see what was going on and get my thoughts on that together. But anyway, thanks for listening. Always a pleasure. Deuce. Oh yeah, and I almost forgot, check out the blog, www.awakeneddemagogue.com. New content on the way. That's where you can also listen to my podcast. You can buy some paintings. We are in holiday season, so go ahead and get an original artwork from I will send off a certificate of authenticity and like a provenance starter piece for you guys, because let's face it, I'm going to be someone whose artwork is worth something, okay? I promise, I swear to you, that's my word. That's what we're going to do. You can also check me out on www.theculturedscholar.com. If you own a business or a brand, you're a politician, you're a government official, and you want to make sure that your plans, your policies, your vision are in alignment with the direction that humanity is going, that the liberal world order is taking us for sustainable development and beyond, hit me up. I will get you aligned with sustainable development goals and let you be an advocate for change and help you become a change agent for humanity. Okay, now, deuce.